Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident. To boldly go where no
man has gone before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon. You are listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live. I'm Martin.
I'm Denise.
Merry New Year!
Is it okay to say that still?
I think we can say it's our first show back, and then that's it after that.
Happy New Year. I mean, I'm speaking to someone who's still got a Christmas tree up, so...
Oh, that's so chavvy, isn't
it's
it?
That, yeah. Beautiful, though, Martin, and I'm still in the spirit of Christmas.
I don't know, you're just thinking to yourself, that's not going to come down all year, that, is it? She'll think, oh, it's...
Well, no, it's real, you see.
Yeah. Sorry, is that in a metaphysical way?
Too beautiful, and I didn't watch enough Christmas films, so I need it up for this weekend.
You don't watch Christmas films once December's gone. That's the golden rule.
Yeah, but I'm a rule breaker. That's my
rebel.
I rebel in such dangerous ways.
You're an Elon Musk follower, aren't you? Free speech, that's what it's about. Free speech, yeah, that's all that matters.
I mean, I can't believe you're starting off our new year by calling me an Elon Musk follower. I've been on air less than 2 minutes.
Well, look at it this way, things can only get better.
Can't they?
Yeah. Well, as you say, I'm a bit here, there and everywhere at the moment, because I got here...
It's been a while, hasn't it?
I got here quite late, due to waiting for a bus.
I was planning an alternative show without the music.
Well, you were going to do some a cappella numbers for everyone, were you?
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, I think so. I also slid down most of my road on my bottom.
Oh, yeah. It snowed a week ago, and now no one can use the pavements for two. Yeah.
You get to the Hallam... Going out my way, you get to the Hallamshire Hospital... and that's it. It's sheet ice on every pavement.
Yeah, I'm the heights of Norfolk Park, same thing. Yeah.
It's terrible. Anyway, we've put together a show here, apparently, it says here. Golden Globes I've got here on a list. The first of many tedious awards things, which I hope we're not going to go... We're not going to labour, let's say.
There's a film we're looking forward to that did well, which is The Brute List. That's out in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Fortnight and counting. So
we're very excited about that.
More about that, I think, when it comes out.
Well, because you're keen on that, aren't you?
I really liked it, yes.
Of course, Wicked, which we know is mine of the two of us.
We all have our weak spots, don't we? And I know that I have many of my own.
But it was nice to see Demi Moore getting an award as well.
Yeah, you know, I've sort of stepped back a bit from If the Substance. I still think it's a bit of a... Yeah, all right. I've seen it all before. But Demi Moore.
But also Kieran Culkin, a winner, and we're going to review that.
We'll
film
be reviewing that film shortly. Just looking through. Sebastian Stan wrote a bit of a slap in the face for the Trumpster.
but it wasn't the Trump that he won the for, though, was it? It was a different man.
Oh, of course. Sorry. Which
nobody gave much love to the Trump film.
No. The thing with the Golden Globes, I get confused with them because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
And you know,
in first though, don't they?
And there's like it's difficult enough trying to like argue about whether someone should be up for the lead actor or actress, or the supporting actor or actress. But with the Golden Globes, you've got lead actor for a comedy. How many awards have you got? It's almost just like nothing's not going to get an award one way or another.
One of my favourite scores of the year, though, Challengers, won the Best Original Film Score. Mm-hmm. And I loved that score more than I loved the film. I remember you being a bit sort of, yeah. But the score, fantastic. You like Baby Reindeer, didn't you? That did well.
I did, and that was ages ago, wasn't it? That was ages ago. And that was like... I'm not saying I discovered it alone, but it was before then there was that furore about it.
There was a hoopla. Yeah. A hoopla about the reindeer.
Yes. Yeah. Malarkey, I think, as Boris Johnson calls it.
I think I came to the first episode after a lot of the hoopla and I couldn't be bothered. I only made one episode of that. Never mind. Colin Farrell, though, did his prosthetic business in The Penguin.
Oh, did he win? I'm trawling through pages and pages of awards here. Oh, yes. There's one for him.
But it's a good tip. It's a good sort of indication of what's... I mean, The Brutalist and Emilia Perez doing well at the Oscars.
As I say, I was thinking maybe in 2 weeks' time doing a special on The Brutalist and Corbett...
Sounds good to me.
My brain's turned to mash here.
Brady Corbett.
Because I've got music from Childhood of a Leader, Vox Lux, and I was downloading some of the score for The Brutalist today. And I think there's a lot to talk about that film and that filmmaker. But so I'm going to say no more.
Okay. We need the prop. You've forgotten the prop for the next item.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah. Right.
Bear with me while Martin leans across the studio.
Well, you see, the thing is, because I got here late, I haven't been able to change into my show suit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just hearing me civvies.
I thought I was missing the dicky bow, yeah.
There you are, you see. I just don't feel right at the moment standing before this mic and just, you know...
I'm a little bit disappointed, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, normally you've got one of your ball gowns on, haven't you? Yeah, and look at you.
Got a Pixies T-shirt on.
Another grungy, I wish I'd been to see this band when they were good T-shirts.
I did.
See? Yeah. I can read you like a book. Oh, that was a... Farewell, then. Olivia Hussey.
Yes, this was just before the New Year, wasn't it?
It was, yes, yes. So Olivia Hussey sprang to fame in the late 1960s, where she played Juliet in Franco Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet.
She was very young in that, wasn't she? Like 15 she or was 16, maybe?
I think she might have been between 15 and 60, depending on... I think she was 16 whilst the film was being made. And Leonard Whiting, I think, who was 17, played Romeo. And this was an immensely successful film, made an absolute fortune. And Hussey went on to have a sort of acting career. She never again reached the heights of Romeo and Juliet. In fact, by the mid to late 70s, she was making some pretty sort of low quality thrillers in exploitation films.
But didn't she sue Paramount Pictures later on down the line?
After Zeffirelli died. Now, apparently, they'd always had a great reputation while he was alive, and she looked upon him as a father figure, so she said. And then after Zeffirelli died, she tried to sue Paramount, because she said some scenes of her nude had been shot without her knowing.
I'm pretty sure she was only 15 then.
It may well have been. And she took Paramount to court. And then she also took the Criterion Collection, who do Blu-rays, DVDs of art house movies, to court for having put the film out on Blu-ray. Now, both cases were thrown out, I haven't had time to get into all it, because as I'll be telling you, I've been researching something else all week. So all I can say was that was what happened. But I did find out something really, really peculiar about her. And I can't quite believe this, but after she made Romeo and Juliet, she moved to Hollywood. She had been based in London. And she bought the house that Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate lived in 5 weeks after Sharon Tate was murdered.
Oh, really?
In the house. And I just can't quite get my head around that. I know you can't sort of just say, well, yeah.
Perhaps it was going cheap. Isn't
that peculiar?
Notorious. But maybe it was like, I need somewhere.
I need somewhere quick. No, it's all right. I'll repaint it afterwards.
Oh, God.
No. But anyway, Olivia Hussey. What have I got next?
Well, you suggested a trailer trash. This is the Steven Soderbergh.
Right, and I'll just make an apology here. Just, I went to see Nosferatu yesterday, and I got a whole barrage of horror trailers. So, but Presence looked as though it might be trying to do something a bit different.
Yes, like
a haunted house
that's
movie.
That's what they're claiming.
Yes, and these claims often do not deliver.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And he's always someone that I'm intrigued to see if it's a yes or a no.
Yeah, he's always an interesting director, and he attempts to do some different stuff. So that's what we're putting out for trailer trash for this week, and I think it's out soon. Our final piece is, I had a really weird experience
last week. Really,
very weird experience. Mm. And if Miriam is listening, I've been chatting with Miriam on WhatsApp.
Hello, Miriam.
Miriam, hello. Your seat is here waiting for you. And we were talking about, she'd been listening to some podcasts about sort of just strange, mate, are these supernatural experiences or whatever. I was doing the ironing on New Year's Day.
Oh, you know how to live, Martin.
There's some, and even I have to have a rest from my excessively hedonistic lifestyle. And I got my iTunes on to shuffle. And I think I was doing a shirt at the time. clouds of steam rising up from the ironing board.
You're setting it up. It's
brilliant,
isn't it?
And this great track came on. I thought, well, what's this? It sort of sounds a bit sort of 1960s-ish, is it? And I checked on the phone, and it was a track called Double Face, A Doppia Faccia, by Nora Orlandi. And I thought, well, who's she? Never heard of her before. And I'd seen it was on a collection of Italian soundtracks. So it come up completely by chance. And I couldn't remember hearing it before.
So this is AI saying, Martin, you might like this.
It's not AI. It's a very, very old iPhone with, you know, it's basically, I don't even use what's her name, Alexa or Siri on this stuff. And I thought, well, that's a lovely voice. And I just sort of Googled her. And I found out that, I mean, we talk about women not getting jobs in the film industry, and that is quite rightly, and thank God, changing. But I can't think.
Sorry, wait, it's quite right that women don't get the.
Quite rightly changing. You can't pick me up on this, you know.
Women don't do anything quite women. Rightly. Quite rightly.
Could I have a coffee, please, Denise? I can't think of another woman, certainly back in the 60s or 70s, that was composing scores for films. I mean, I can think of maybe Mika Levy today who does that. But and in the Italian film industry, which is such a male...
So macho.
Yeah. And she had composed scores for 16 or 17 films... She did quite a few for...
Were they films that you knew some of? Or?
Well, some of them, yes. But, I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of spaghetti westerns. Mm. Dozens and dozens of what they term giallos, which are like these sort of criminal things where... And I'm going to have to apologise for this, but just a load of women get murdered over the course of the... And
women wandering around getting murdered.
And she wasn't just singing on this track, she'd composed it. And I found that she had been in this singing group called 2+2 in the 50s, been enormously successful.
You've
as
been
a
down
pop
a right
singer.
World,
I tell you, I'm still digging, baby. I'm still digging. And then she'd so she had an enormous success as a singer and an arranger and a composer. And then she started moving into film, and she sang on loads and loads of songs on different scores of films until she eventually started composing entire scores. And this score, a Double Face, was a thriller with Klaus Kinski and Margaret Lee. And it was set in Britain. A lot of it was shot in London, and there's some fantastic footage around Leicester Square and that in the film. And I just thought this track was amazingly good. So
I'm excited about this.
We're going to play a couple of bits of her music this week, and I hope you like it. I've tried to keep them as varied as possible as well, but this is the song that first hooked me into Nora Orlandi, and this is the theme from A Double Face.
Se guarderai negli occhi miei, se leggerai dentro di me, allora certo capirai tutto il male che hai fatto a me. Dirmi una bugia, non voglio creder più, il gioco è ormai finito, lo vedi, hai vinto tu. Esco dalla tua vita, così come vuoi tu, finita è la partita, non giocherai.
esco dalla tua vita, così come vuoi tu. Finita la partita, non giocherò mai più. Esco dalla tua vita, così come vuoi tu. Finita la partita, non giocherò mai più.
You're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live, and that was Nora Orlandi and the theme from A Double Face. And just to bring things together again, I did say there was a... because Nora Orlandi passed away at the age of 91 on New Year's Day 2025.
Oh.
Might it have been when I was listening to that song?
That's strange. Like she was calling to you.
From beyond the grave.
Mm.
But that was weird. More from Nora later on in the show, but now we shall carry on back.
Well, we've got some reviews, haven't we? Because,
we have.
Because we were away for a few weeks and there was some stuff out.
There was.
Boxing Day. Christmas
and some stuff
year.
Not out as well, as I found. Yes. Mm. So we'll sort of go back to that first a week ago sort of thing, just to keep us living in the now. And Robert Eggers' version of Nosferatu, which has previously been made back in 1921 by F.W. Murnau, with Max Schreck as Orlok, the vampire. Then Werner Herzog had a go with Klaus Kinski as the vampire. And obviously, the original film was banned, almost every copy destroyed, because it pretty much ripped off the Dracula story and they hadn't bought the rights to it. But it has now become a standard piece of one of the great works of film history. And Robert Eggers has been let loose on it. And you've seen this as well, haven't you?
I have, yes.
And what do you think?
Well, I'll let you review it, because it's not my genre overall. So I applaud it, but I didn't emotionally connect with it and love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's... it's beautiful. It's beautifully, astonishing in moments.
And God bless them for, like... God bless them.
What?
Know, for, like, it's such a known story and still finding something original to present it.
Yeah.
I just know too much.
Yes,
already.
Yeah.
And I don't adore the whole genre. So, and I have spoken to people who love Nosferatu, love Dracula, love Robert Eggers, and they just absolutely adore it. And I get that. But it's just not for me, Martin. So I do rate it as a film, but I will never watch it again.
I mean, I've enjoyed Eggers' work up until now. Very, very much so. Mm. The Witch, which is nearly 10 years old now. Then he did The Lighthouse, which I think, for me, is his best film.
Yes,
Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson getting out of their head on rum and God knows what else in a lighthouse for several months. And then there was The Northman about 5 years ago with it's his Viking epic. So this, as I say, this film is beautiful. It has a couple of, I thought, quite good shock moments. The performances, in most cases, are very good. I'll go out and say I thought Lily Rose Depp was really good.
She's the centre of the film, isn't
and
she?
And some of the way she uses her body in the film, with these sort of seizures that she has, is really quite alarming.
Yeah.
Nicholas Holt, I thought, was very good as her husband.
He was suitably determined and wet in equal measures, wasn't he?
Exactly that. Orloff is played by Bill Skarsgård, who maybe is trying to... but he's unrecognisable.
Yeah.
Probably because he doesn't want people to remember that he was in the remake of The Crow. But we do remember.
And, you know, Martin remembers.
Maybe you need to do something else, Bill. Willem Dafoe, his first performance of the year, I think, and we'll mark that as. And the truly abysmal Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Oh, God, he was
bad. In a thankless role, which made me think, you want this guy as James Bond?
Do they, though?
I think, well, watching this, I think Nicholas Holt would be good.
Mm.
He's got that English sort of refinement he could bring out. But the film sort of fires on all cylinders. Although I still can't work out how you get a boat from Romania to the Baltic coast.
Leave that with them, yeah.
But the problem is it's 2.25 hours and it outstays its welcome. So, yeah, you can... I think, like you, I was impressed and I could say, yeah, I can... But I don't think I'll ever sit through it again.
No.
But it's worth seeing once,
absolutely,
I think.
Absolutely, 100%.
But I'm not going to be rushing back to watch it again.
Yeah. But well done. It's not for me, but good. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. What was for me, came out on Boxing Day, we talked about it a lot.
Yes.
In the lead up. A Better Man. Michael Gracie, Australian director Michael Gracie, who did The Greatest Showman, which I loathed and thought it was terribly put together. Have you seen Better Man or not?
Not yet.
No,
not yet.
Okay. I absolutely adored this film, and I enjoyed it from start to finish. It's kind of Robbie Williams is a very strong voice in the film. It's got some great musical numbers. It's basically him regretting, if you like, some of his behaviour as getting famous, being in the boy band, going solo. Having all this massive self-doubt about himself, but coming off as a really cocky, popular celebrity. There's some amazing performances from, well, you don't really see John O'Davies because he is playing the body and younger voice of, but obviously the CGI chimp. But you just go with it straight away that... I remember bits of that film now, and I can see Robbie Williams.
Yeah,
it's really weird. There's some beautiful set pieces in it. There's one especially, which is him or the band take that rising to fame, so getting the deal, and then they have a little bit of a montage, and it all takes place at sort of Regent Street, London. Mm. They've got the old Tower Records there.
Oh.
There's this kind of it's all so well put together, and they sort of. If you know the band as well, you'll get the different references to the costumes they wear at different points.
Yeah.
And then the whole of the street is joining this ensemble dance. It's just really beautifully put together, really emotional. It's got an emotional heft to it that might surprise you. And I gave it 4 stars. I absolutely adored it.
I mean, I must admit, I am really looking forward to it. I'm not going into this thinking, oh, I'll tolerate this. And I think this approach they've taken has really got to be commended because, let's face it, musical biopics is the genre where films go to die.
Yeah, and he's done a lot of interviews, obviously publicising the film, where he is just the right level, just like the film, of self-deprecating, cocky.
Yeah.
But he himself says, look, I'm not the best singer and dancer, but this is what I want to do, and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And a big... What's the word for F you to anybody that doesn't like it? But there's some real regret in there about his behaviour towards other people, his relationship with other people. He has a very, it's very like Rocket Man. I liked Rocket Man a lot.
I didn't say no.
It's very like that in terms of some of the themes of remembering his relationship with his parents and the drug taking and the stupidity of it all. But it's such an enjoyable watch. Highly recommend.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. I'll be going to see that next week. The only other film I would... I'm going to go back to that came out around Boxing Day was Justin Kurzel's The Order, an absolutely brilliant, cracking thriller about the FBI tracking down a neo-Nazi gang in America during the 1980s with Jude Law as a jaded... FBI agent who's seen it all and doesn't really want to see any more. It's an absolutely brilliant film, and you can't see it anywhere, it would seem. I was down in London over the Christmas week, and there was one cinema where I could get to see it at a sensible time. And by that I mean, it wasn't 9 o'clock in the morning or 11:30 at night. One cinema where it was on at 3 in the afternoon. They have just dropped this film, and you know the way it's been treated, I think, is like quite callous, and I don't know why. I really don't know why. I don't think it was on in Sheffield anywhere. I think it was on for one screening a day for a week at The View in Doncaster, which is fast becoming the cinema to look for films that are being treated like this. Because before Christmas, I had to track down Guy Maddin's Rumours.
I still haven't seen that. I really wanted to see it.
But it was that you weren't allowed. I don't think it was on in Sheffield at all. And, you know, I'm there, 12:30, Doncaster View, going to see a Guy Maddin film. How mad is that? And when I asked for my ticket, the lady behind the counter said, what?
I never heard.
I said, Rumours. She said, oh, yes, oh, yeah, we are showing it. I said, yeah, I know. That's why
it's not just a
that's
rumor.
Why I've made this journey. And she said, oh, there's no one else in there. And I said, I don't expect there to be.
Wait a minute, was this woman from a Carry On film?
No.
Oh, I say.
Oh. It was Rita Webb. Doncaster.
Of all places.
But it sort of adds to the... It adds to the colour of our lives, doesn't it? That we tend to go into these sort of sitcom situations quite a lot. But, again, it was a really interesting film, probably about 30 minutes too long. Cate Blanchett, Charles Dance, G7 leaders get lost in a forest while there's a zombie apocalypse going on. And it's a Guy Maddin film, and... I could have seen Sonic the Hedgehog in about 20 screens in Sheffield. Sheffield's got 60 screens.
I've got to squeeze in another one before we go to the next track.
Please, go on, Nick. Certainly.
Did you see Nickel Boys?
No.
Came out 3rd of January or something like that. It was stunning. I saw it at the light, but I think it is getting a release at the showroom as well, but a bit later. Ramel Ross is the director. It's about two sort of 1950s America, two teenage black boys in this reform school. It's not a reform school. It is basically another way of... it's awful treatment of these young black boys. It's got a weird approach of being from the point of view. So all through it, as it starts, you're like, is this... When are we changing from POV filming? It doesn't. It is POV the whole way through. It's fantastic.
Because that's been tried a couple of times in the past.
It really works in this, and there's some amazing performances in it as well. Highly recommend.
Well, I think we've given you a range of stuff there, and I'm going to go back now to another track from Nora Orlandi, and this is some music that she composed the entire score for The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward. Now, one of the good things about the past week or two that I've been researching is I've watched a lot of films with Hedwig Fenech, a French-Italian star of many giallos and sex comedies, and it's been a... I've had to really put my nose to the grindstone for some of this, but I'll do this for you. And so this is, and it's an absolutely beautiful piece of music, and really highlights Orlandi's use of breezy voices.
Listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, online and on digital. I forgot what FM we're on. It's been so long. I'm Denise. And Martin.
Oh, hi. I'm still here. Yeah, I'm still here.
And that track was?
That was from the score of The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward. Interesting. Yes.
Strange. Very good. Well, we've got a few more reviews to go through. And these are a little bit more recent.
Yes, well, some stuff that's
new
come out
releases.
been out this week. Mm. Yeah.
Going to start with you with a real pain.
A real pain. Mm. Now, one of the reasons I went to see this was it was only an hour and a half long. And I thought, I can't do another two and a half. Yeah. No. So I was sort of in two minds about it. So Jesse Eisenberg has written, directed and stars in this. And he's always an actor I've just felt a bit...
Yeah.
And everyone I've spoken to seems to feel exactly the same about Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but...
Well, I think too associated with The Social Network as well and that character.
Yeah. And, you know, Mark has been doing even greater things this week, hasn't he? Where's Nick Clegg when you need him? Bit of politics there. Anyway.
Ben Elton.
Where? Ben Elton, what's he done?
That's what he said, a little bit of politics. That used to
Oh,
be
was
mind.
It? Was it? No. Yeah. I'm surprised you remember.
Yeah.
You must have been very young.
I put my mum through hell because I really liked him then.
I went to see
him. Before
he
turned a bit Tory.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really great.
Mm.
And now I look back and I was like, my mum was right. He's an annoying little... Anyway, we digress.
Anyway, just sorry. Because I'm just trying to drag you out of that rabbit hole you've gone down there.
On air.
So this is a film about two 30-something New Yorkers who are cousins who take a trip to Poland, which is a tour around Jewish heritage sites in Poland. And it's a small group, half a dozen people, and they spend a lot of time in Warsaw. They go to visit a concentration camp near Lublin. And the main thing is they've gone there is because their grandmother, who was a camp survivor, passed away recently, and they're doing it in memory of her. And yeah, I was thinking, well, what's this going to be like? It'll be Jesse Eisenberg being anxious and nerdy, and Macaulay Culkin being, you know, cool, weird and wild. Yeah. And that's exactly how it starts off. Like I thought,
oh, I'm in for it now.
Yeah. And then it just sort of becomes something else, very quietly and very subtly. And with the other people on the tour, you sort of assume, due to their age, that they're going to be a certain type of stereotype. Mm. And none of them really turn out to be like that. And so it's a quite a way... It's really interesting the way it avoids delivering to you what you expect it's going to deliver all the time. And I found it really, really refreshing. And there are a couple of absolutely sort of standout emotional moments. Mm. And although Culkin gets what you think is like the big stuff in it, Eisenberg, I think, gives himself the real emotional clincher scene at the dinner that they're having in
it's
the hotel.
It's devastating, isn't it, that moment?
And because you find out a lot more about everyone on this trip.
Because Kieran Culkin's character is a charmer, isn't he? He, I think they say it in the film at one point, he walks in a room and everyone's like, oh, this guy.
Yeah, this is the guy. Yeah.
But he's got his own demons.
Yeah.
He's like this for a reason.
Mm.
Very moving moments.
And that sort of got me, and I just thought, you know what, that was emotionally, I found it just so overwhelming, actually.
And these two are cousins, aren't they, that have been, it's almost like they're brothers, they've been childhood friends, but they haven't been together for a while.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a little bit about getting older and your priorities changing, and there's so much in there about reaching your middle age as a man, I think, that is really
interesting. And it became another one of those films which, I think we've, Close and with Monster, we've had about male friendship, and it's I'm really glad there are some films that are taking that topic on and treating it in a serious way. And the other thing to say about it, there's one of the people on the tour, I'm thinking, where have I seen her before?
I got through the whole to the end of the film, and I saw the credits said Jennifer Grey, and I was like, what, baby Jennifer Grey? Nobody puts baby in a Holocaust camp. I was like, it was her, yeah.
And does she not look $1 million?
She looks stunning, and she was stunning.
Yeah, and she looked a woman of the age that she is, and she just looked fantastic. And she was great in it as well. But I would thoroughly recommend A Real Pain, which has a double meaning, sort of.
A real pain.
In the title, yeah.
That guy is a real pain, but they are going through
real pain.
Very good. I thought there's scenes as well in that, because they visit a Holocaust camp.
Yeah.
And I thought he did some very wise directorial choices there of not making it about the characters and making it about the experience.
Like a film that almost sort of takes some time out, doesn't it? And just and really doesn't say anything. You just see. And there's no one lecturing you or anything.
Did you see that film? I know we've got other stuff to talk about, but just very briefly, there was a film of Lena Dunham.
Stephen Fry. I didn't know.
That was a similar sort of theme, but it was set earlier. It was set in the 70s, I think.
Mm.
Quite interesting, different approaches, but Treasure, that was called. Anyway. Moving on.
Another musical biopic.
Big release is Pablo Larraín's Maria, which I saw last night. This is the reason that we are not having a review of Baby Girl, because I was going to watch Baby Girl straight after, and I decided that I've just seen a film that is like a lovely wild mushroom risotto with a very good bottle of white. If I go and see Baby Girl now, it's like getting chips and curry sauce, which chips and curry sauce might be really good, you know, in the right time, but not when you've just watched Maria. It was really good.
That's a devastating review.
And that's for a film I haven't even seen.
I mean, it's a lot of words to put on the poster, but I think they should try.
This ain't no mild mushroom risotto. Yeah. But Maria is beautiful. So Pablo Rain is the director, who Chilean director, who directed Jackie and
Spencer
as well. And this is a bit like a trilogy of these iconic
women from
the 20th century. Now, Angelina Jolie is exceptional as Maria Callas. The setting is end of her life, and it's very clear from, it's not a spoiler to say that, it's very clear from the opening that we're looking at the final week of her life and what's going on. And it's dreamy, it's, you're not sure what's real and what's not real. It's not a, this is the final week, let's analyse what it is, just what you'd expect from Jackie and Spencer, really. She is, you're not sure what's real, what's not real. She's taking, self-medicating, but refusing to get diagnosed for what's wrong with her. And there's this lovely relationship that she has with her butler and housemaid. And in fact, the housemaid is made by Alba Rohrwacher, who is the sister of La Chimera's director, Alice Rohrwacher.
Oh, really?
So she plays Bruna, the housekeeper. It's just so stunning. You're not sure what's real and what's not real. I'm pretty sure that the accompanying orchestra for Madame Butterfly, as she's walking down the Parisian street, is in her mind. But if you can imagine, like, living opera, because at the end of her life in the 70s, she's in Paris. She hasn't been performing for at least a decade. And if your whole life is this opera and the drama of opera and the characters that she's played and lived, what must it have been like without it? And she's kind of debating trying to find her voice again as well.
Yeah. I always think that about opera singers, you know, are they ever not in a state of near hysteria?
Yeah.
You know, because of the way they have to perform.
And these parts that are written for them hundreds of years before.
I don't know if you've ever been to an opera. I've been to quite a few.
Tour as much because it's so expensive, I think, to
I used to go to Opera North a bit years and years ago, but...
They don't tour much anymore, I don't
know. But the fact is, like, the plot of every opera is just bonkers. It makes no sort of narrative, literal sense in a way. It's just there, but it's like shouted in your face.
This film really captures that sort of high drama and being in the middle of all of that. And yeah, it's absolutely dreamy. And of those three, I really like all three of those films. But this is topped it for me.
Well, I'm looking forward to that one because I've loved both Jackie and Spencer.
I don't want to say too much either.
I think you're right there.
Yeah, I will go and watch it again,
having
now gone into a deep dive of... Because my experience of opera and classical music is mostly I saw it in a film. So
I know exactly what you mean.
Was in the Room of the View.
Yeah.
That's how I got into Verdi.
Yeah.
I said got into, listened to a bit of opera.
Okay, just on... TV, Netflix have premiered their big prestige show, American Primeval, this week, which, thank God, is just 6 episodes and is completely self-contained, and you won't have to be watching it for the next 15 years or have to suffer Kelly Riley for 10 years flouncing about.
Say what you really feel. No.
I've got a thing about Kelly Riley now. No more, please. Ever since Eden Lake, I've not liked the woman. Anyway, this is set in the 1850s in Utah with huge, horrifically savage battles between Shoshone Native Americans, Mormons, the US Cavalry, and just about anyone else who wants to show up with a gun or a hatchet. It rattles along at breakneck speed. It looks absolutely amazing. And you almost think this is how you would want, if they ever get round to filming it, Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian to look. But at the moment, that still remains a film which is impossible to adapt, it would seem. But it's worth a viewing. And I'd say it's only 6 episodes, and then you can walk away from it. Thank God. So, but it is violent. Very, very violent. So
very violent.
I'll just warn you of that. I'll go back to another track from Nora or Landy.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good to me.
This is another track, actually, from Double Face. And there is one scene where Klaus Kinski goes to a happening in London, as you would do if you were there in 1968, where there is psychedelic lights, loud music, go-go dancers, motorbikes whirling around on the dance floor, and he just sits there with a sort of puzzled look on his face. And Orlandi provides this very jazzed up dancedelic tune for everyone to jerk to. Denise, get down off the table, will you? Okay, the track's over now.
I'm in Soho, it's the 60s. Great.
Right, so that was another track from A Double Face, written by Nora Orlandi, a recent discovery of mine, or should I say ours now. We've taken her into our world of the film show.
Lovely Nora.
So next week then. The big one, yet another musical biopic.
Then they've got to find another new way of telling the story.
Another new way of telling it.
What are you going to do?
A complete unknown. Timothy Chalamet plays
Chalamalama.
Bob Dylan at a very specific time where Dylan's going from acoustic to electric.
Traitor!
Judas. It's Judas.
Is that what they said?
Judas! You can't say that to me.
It wasn't that.
I play it really
I'm a little bit too young.
Yes, well, not that young.
And I've got a bit of an aversion to Bob Dylan.
You have,
well.
You have. And in a similar way that I do to Judy Garland. So we had made...
Eliza Minnelli and Barbara Streisand. Yes, yes.
I think most people will see my point of view with us. So we'd made an agreement that we weren't going to play any Bob Dylan next week. But
I'm not here, so you can do what you like.
Isn't that a shame? Oh, you're not here? Really?
And
no.
I ain't going to be listening to the show if it's going to be a Bob Dylan show.
Well, I'll see what I can put together for those of you out there who may want some Dylan.
You'll be all right. If I was here, I'd be probably playing Maria Callas.
Well, I might even... Well, as I'll be here on my own, I can do a double header.
That's what you like, can't you? Yeah.
And I could do a Maria versus Bob thing. Play two tracks. That's going to fill up quite a bit of time.
There are other films vying for your attention.
Such as?
Vermiglio. Italiano.
I'm sorry, have you eaten something that's upset
you?
It
won the Silver Lion Grand Jury Prize and it's an Italian Alps 1944 drama. Looks good. I'm excited about that. Nickel Boys, I mentioned earlier, showing. The showroom got a spotlight on Mishma, A Life in Four Chapters, a Paul Schrader film.
That's a stunning movie and it has an absolutely... Well, I can only call it awesome score from Philip Glass. Yeah. It's
that might be worth your attention.
Yes.
And then there's a couple of new releases. How to Make a Million Before Grandma Dies is on at the Light on Monday. I'm going to go and catch that. Mm-hmm. That looks fun. Well, it doesn't look fun. It looks like a sad Thai drama.
Sad Thai drama. Apart from a pad Thai, is it?
Yeah. Sad Thai. I've found a new genre. We're in the first show of 2025 and I've got a new genre. And then William Tell.
Food to take to the correct nationality
decided,
of film.
Yeah, I've already decided Maria Callas is a nice wild mushroom risotto with a very good white wine.
And now it's a sad tie for a sad tie film.
Don't go on air hungry. That's the lesson, kids.
Just one last
film, new release at the Light on Friday is William Tell, which looks...
Whatever.
End on a high note.
Class bang. it looked a bit sort of, you know, medieval people with crossbows. Where's the apple? Shoot it off his head. Yeah. There you go.
I may or may not as well catch up with Baby Girl, which we've decided already, without even seeing it. Chips and curry sauce.
I think... And I did this a few years ago when we were doing a show. I was going to see as many films as possible, and I was becoming clinically depressed from it. And I think that is a film to make you clinically depressed.
I ran into Mel, our friend at the showroom, and she said, I saw 5 minutes of it, and I saw Nicole Kidman have an orgasm twice, and it was just,
So we're going to leave you now with our final track from Nora Orlandi. And like many composers during the 1960s, she made a lot of her time went towards composing for spaghetti westerns.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are hundreds more than we have ever heard of. And this is from one called Johnny Utah. And this is the title track from Johnny Utah. By Nora Orlandi. I hope you've enjoyed discovering this great work.
It's been great. Thank you for bringing it.
We'll see you, or you'll be hearing from us very soon.
Yeah, enjoy your films, guys.
Wherever there's a road he rides, wherever. Is a rainless horse.